buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Hour number two on a Wednesday, live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. It's overtime. William Pattison, Dawson Wise joining you. I'm about 20 minutes, 15 minutes away from the Red Sox and Braves live here on Fan Run Radio. You can listen to tonight's matchup. Braves got a big win last night, 4-2 over the Sox. Chris Sale, former Red Sox pitcher on the mound for the Braves tonight, getting the opportunity to go up against his former team. Should be a good matchup. We'll get you out there in about 15 minutes. A quick reminder, the Fan Run merch store is finally live. 15% off. Yes, 15% off this first week with code FANRUN for the win. That's the number for the win, and free shipping on orders over $50 with code free shipping. And 37 club members, you have a special code for 25% off in our Discord and soon an email. Make sure to take advantage of that, and we appreciate you being a member of the 37 club. Great first hour. We'll continue it here in the second with In the News with Dawson Wise. Going to get you up to date on everything going on in the sports world. In the News with Dawson Wise.
We'll start in the MLB. Shohei Ohtani's longtime interpreter, Ibe Mizuhara, agreed Wednesday to plead guilty to federal charges of felony bank fraud and submitting a false tax return. After authorities found that he stole nearly $17 million from the Dodgers superstar in order to pay off his gambling debts to an illegal sports book. His arraignment now scheduled for Tuesday in the U.S. District Court for the Central District of California. The total maximum sentence Mizuhara could receive for both crimes would be 33 years of imprisonment and fines of $1.25 million, but in exchange for the guilty plea, prosecutors likely going to recommend a reduced sentence. A spokesperson for Ohtani declined to comment, as did a spokesman for the Dodgers. The initial complaint against Mizuhara, remember, was filed back on April 11th, just 3 weeks after an ESPN investigation detailing wire transfers of $500,000 from Ohtani's bank account to the bookmaking operation. He initially told ESPN, Mizuhara did, that Ohtani had sent the money to help him pay his debts, but later changed his story to say Ohtani had no knowledge of his gambling or the wire transfers. Ohtani's attorneys first alleged that the star was the victim of a, quote, massive theft. The documents filed Wednesday further detail a relationship of trust in which Ohtani, who does not speak a lot of English, relied on his translator to help him with everything from press conferences to speaking with financial advisors and sports agents, as well as opening bank accounts. Mizuhara began placing bets with the illegal bookmaker in 2021, and he began to exploit Ohtani as his losses mounted. He changed contact information on Ohtani's bank accounts and impersonated Ohtani in phone calls. It is the first note of resolution in what has become a long, dragged-out situation. Some of the details, I don't have time to get to them tonight, but some of the details in there, I mean, you know, stealing money to go pay off a gambling loss. The changing contact information is wild. It's so he could get communication to his phone on behalf of Shohei Ohtani's bank account. So this is a really awful situation, really, for Shohei Ohtani, a guy that he thought he could trust to help him out, and clearly that is not what happened. Now, we talked about this a few weeks ago, and you know it was going to be, okay, how long does Ohtani have to deal with this before he can move on? Mm-hmm. In my opinion, I think he can start to move on now. It's pretty clear he did not have anything to do with this. He's the one, kind of a victim of his translator's actions here. But a few weeks ago, we didn't know that for sure yet. It was more, okay, is Ohtani involved? It's pretty clear now. These court documents today really went into it. He is not involved. There's nothing there. His spokesman did not even comment. I think they have started to move past. The Dodgers have certainly moved past it at this point. It feels like this is finally coming to an end for him. It's kind of overshadowed, number one, that he signed with the Dodgers. Number two, he's having a really great start to the year. Mm-hmm. And number three, that they figured it out in L.A., you're kind of overshadowed by, well, what's going on in the gambling situation?
Yeah.
He's finally out from under it. In my opinion, he can start to move on. Can Ohtani and the Dodgers finally move on from this situation?
Yeah, I think they can. They have to. You know, Ohtani has had his name cleared in a court of law in court. So there should be no more, you know, Ohtani was a part of this, Ohtani, yada, yada, yada. The Dodgers and Ohtani just need to move on. It's, you know, it's in the past. What happened, you give off a couple of the details. Dangerous, really, is the way I look at it. a guy that's taken advantage of a guy that is, you know, makes millions and millions and millions of dollars, doesn't know how to speak English, comes over to a different country and trusts this guy. And this guy takes advantage of him and steals millions of dollars from him, getting in his bank account. That's dangerous, man. Seriously, that, you know, I'm glad they found this out before, you know, something even worse could have happened. But this is just dangerous. And talk about taking advantage of a guy that you trust. Just very scary. Do you think Jonte Porter speaks Japanese? Possibly, you know, he's looking for a job. Possible next job for him?
Jonte Parlay. Oh, boy. We'll stay in the MLB for the second one. Major League Baseball has sent a warning to its clubs about encouraging players subject to the MLB draft to withdraw from high school baseball to become eligible to sign as international players. This includes American and Canadian players.
Yeah.
The key section of the memo sent to teams Monday and obtained by ESPN reads, quote, "It has come to our attention that clubs have been encouraging amateur players in the United States to withdraw from or otherwise refrain from playing high school baseball in the United States and or Canada in order to try to establish residency in a foreign country in an effort to make themselves eligible to sign under the International Amateur Talent System instead of the MLB's Rule 4 draft. Picks cannot be traded for the most part in the MLB draft, so teams' access to the most elite players is determined by the draft order.
Mm-hmm.
In the international system, teams have similarly sized bonus pools, which any player is able to be negotiated with. All but the best handful of players are acquirable by every team on the international market. The MLB is cracking down on the new movement by teams to try to get elite high school players to drop out and instead enter the league under that international system. The memo says encouraging players to make this change shall be subject to significant penalties, including but not limited to the denial of player selection rights under the MLB draft and loss of benefits under the International Amateur Talent System. A recent example of a legal version of this maneuver was made by shortstop Lucius Fox in 2015, a native of the Bahamas who had moved to Florida to play high school baseball and was regarded a fringe first-round prospect after his junior year of high school. He moved back to the Bahamas and then was declared a free agent by the league's international system in 2015, signing for a $6 million contract with the San Francisco Giants in July of that year. Teams have tested this before. Lucius Fox is not the only example. The Braves, actually, and I can't remember the guy's name, but the Braves have done this as well, where a guy comes to the United States to play baseball, try to get drafted, and then they tell him, okay, hey, go back, go into the international system because we're not going to be able to draft you, so come back so we can sign you instead and pay a little bit more money, kind of sway that player a little bit more to sign than you would get in the, you know, the 11th, 12th round of the MLB draft.
Yeah.
Teams have continued to try to test this. We've seen teams lose these slots. Typically when teams get punished for violating these kinds of rules, they lose their ability to sign players under this system. That's typically the punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, losing your MLB draft picks, I mean, that's your players for the future.
Yeah.
Look at, and I'll use the Atlanta Braves as an example again. I believe, and I'm just going to spitball here, 1, 2, 3, 4, like 5, 6 of their starting players, a few of their starting pitchers all came from draft picks made back in 2016, 2015, guys that have come up through the system. You lose those picks, you're not picking those players anymore that are going to start for your team. It's a more severe language from the MLB. It's something they have. This is new territory for them, saying, okay, we're really going to crack down on this now. I don't see teams stopping completely trying to do this. I think they'll try to find loopholes still because, again, the draft, the MLB, it's not like the NFL. You're not going to see a team on draft day, hey, we'll trade you a sixth rounder and an eighth round pick for the ninth overall pick in the draft. That doesn't happen in the MLB. It can't. I don't remember the rule, but you can't trade draft picks for some reason. But regardless, a lot more severe penalty now. I don't think it's going to stop teams from trying, but we'll have to wait and see. Will teams continue to test the resolve of the MLB?
I think they will, and until one team is caught doing it, then I think that will make everyone else stop. Because, you know, usually a lot of things that work in life, you know, if you're told not to do something, everyone's still going to do it until someone gets caught and you see the repercussions, right? Like, you could even, you know, we talk about gambling. You could even say Jonte Porter, right? Let's say other guys were gambling in the league and it hadn't been caught yet. And now they see what happens to Jonte Porter. They're like, yeah, probably I need to stop. Or, you know, really, any situation in life, you know, you're told not to get the cookies in the cookie jar after school, right? And, you do it, but your brother does it, and he gets caught, and then he get, you know. So I think it will continue until someone gets caught. But the way I look at it, it's kind of like tampering in a way, like kind of, you know, in free agency, whether it be the MLB or the NBA or NFL, kind of like trying to tell a guy what, you know, kind of, let's say you want to bring in a running back, right? And you're talking to him before you're allowed to, kind of tell him, don't talk to these other teams, we'll give you what you want, kind of deal. It's kind of the same what we're seeing here with MLB, kind of tampering of, okay, go do this, all right, leave high school, go back to the Bahamas, we'll pick you up in the international, we'll do it that way, right? Even though they should be staying in high school and going into the MLB draft like a, you know, like a normal prospect would. So I think it'll stop when someone else gets caught.
Final thing today, we'll do a little bit of hypothetical. We'll go to college baseball here for a moment, as D1 Baseball's most recent college baseball bracket prediction was released earlier this week. It's time to start looking at where the Vols can end up in the NCAA tournament. As of May 2nd, now again, a new bracket probably going to be released tomorrow, but Tennessee was listed last week as the fourth overall seed, trailing Texas A&M, Arkansas, and Clemson. Obviously, this was released before the Aggies and Hogs lost their weekend series. The projection has the Knoxville Regional featuring 2-seed West Virginia, 3-seed Virginia Tech, and 4-seed Bryant. Note, again, with last weekend's results, that bracket has probably changed. It's still fun to look at some of these hypotheticals, though. Get an idea of what the Vols' path to Omaha is going to look like. Your bracket's not going to change a ton between the first overall seed and the fourth overall seed. These are a lot of similar teams. Here's what the Vols' regional path to Omaha would look like. West Virginia, the 2-seed, sits at 28-18 on the year, but notably 12-13 away from home. Their notable series wins, Oklahoma, common opponent to Tennessee, and UCF, and they swept common opponent Baylor, while they were swept by common opponent Texas Tech. So some common opponent work there for West Virginia. Maybe some scouting to be done there. Virginia Tech, 31-14, 10-7 away from home, a little bit better. Yet to win a ranked series, though. Losing series to Duke, North Carolina, Georgia Tech, and Wake Forest. Notable series wins Pittsburgh, Boston College, Louisville, and Notre Dame. The final team, Bryant, is 29-16, an 11-12 record away from home. A series win over common opponent UAlbany, who came to Knoxville in non-conference play. Not a terrible draw for the Vols. Obviously, still a long way to go this season. I believe the Super Regional was going to be against, I want to say, I can't remember. Probably Louisville, someone like that. Mm-hmm. One of those, you know, ACC teams that's kind of sitting. Duke, maybe, as well. UNC at the 13 overall seed. Obviously, this is going to change. Now the number one team in the country going into this weekend. But still 2-3 weeks to go in college baseball before we get the bracket. So you could end up as 1, you could end up as 4, you could end up as 7 if you really go on a cold streak here in the last couple weeks. This is not a bad draw, but do you want to be any higher than this? I don't think so. I think 3-4 is probably your sweet spot. Do you want to test that again? I mean, 2 years ago you're the number 1 overall seed, and Notre Dame as the 16th overall seed walks into your house in the Super Regional and knocks you out. So I think the Vols end up as 2 or 3, personally, with maybe a series win at Vanderbilt, a series win next weekend against South Carolina, and then a decent showing in Hoover. I don't think you need to go win the conference tournament.
I don't either.
To be able to be a top 4 seed. I don't think that's a fair standard.
Just win 2 or 3 or 1 or 2.
Win 2-3 games, and I think you're probably a top 4 overall seed. So I think number 2, number 3 is probably where you land. Number 1's probably going to be Clemson. They kind of control their own destiny, I think, at this point. In the ACC. To you, will the Vols end up as a higher seed than number 4 overall?
Again, it depends on how the rest of the season shakes out. And similar to our conversation with the SEC standings, you can only control what you can control. So it depends on what the other teams ahead of them do and how you finish out the season, right? So I think anywhere from 2 to 3 would be a really nice destination to go. Obviously, 1 is a lot of pressure, and typically those teams don't do too well. Tennessee would know better than anyone else. So I think if you can get within the 2 to 3 range, I think that'd be your best off. But it is fun to kind of look at the hypotheticals. We did it every week with the basketball one. I mean, we started doing it in like January.
We're getting to that point with baseball now where you have to start looking at national seeds.
So. Yeah, fun to look at, kind of fun to see the projections and the possible paths as we get closer to the postseason. All right. That's going to wrap it up here on Overtime. We're going to send you to Atlanta, where the Red Sox and Braves are set to have their second game of their series. Chris Sale on the mound for the Braves. The Braves looking to go back-to-back wins after winning last night 4-2. We'll send you out to Atlanta. We'll see you again tomorrow here on Overtime.